Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Yeah. Between living and dying.
The Kentucky Wildcats were victorious over the Tennessee Volunteers at Neyland Stadium. I'm Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett. Today, we're going to talk about it all on 11 personnel. And we're also going to look ahead to the Missouri game this weekend against that dork Eli Drinkwitz. But first, Luckett, Phil Fulmer had what's coming to him. And I don't know too many folks that are happier right now than actually, I think I've said that about every other person who I've talked to about this game. I don't know who could be happier than this guy, but I know you're not a big Phil Fulmer fan.
I just want to know. I know that guy was in the stadium. How come we didn't get one shot of him just once? The entire fourth quarter, I was waiting for just his face, just so I could screenshot it and go in on him on Twitter. With
big old mask on, yeah. Or maybe even had one of those checkerboard neck gaiters. Oh, that'd have been great.
Because part of the reason this is so sweet is just because Tennessee has built up this barrier, I guess, between the two programs, because that's always the thing they've had over Kentucky, even in this last decade. You talk about Lane Kiffin, Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, and now Jeremy Pruitt these last 3 years. So last 13 years, the records, they've been very mediocre. Since 2017, Kentucky's been the better program, but they've always had the, we always beat Kentucky. 2010, Kentucky beat them, but they fired Derek Dooley right away. They fired him right away. Or the next year. 2017, there was a year they fired Butch Jones. They went 0-8. So it was just like, well, you beat the only winless team, worst Tennessee team of all time, and you only won by 3, even though Kentucky was -4 in the turnover margin.
Right.
This year, Kentucky finds a way to be +3 in the turnover margin and blows out a Tennessee team people were talking about as, a preseason darling and team we talked about like that we didn't really understand all that hype.
The we're back Tennessee.
Right.
Team. Yeah.
Feels like 98. And so it was just sweet. And this to beat them like that, that's just a way, like when we grew up watching it, that's how Kentucky lost to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, getting mauled at the line of scrimmage and then making silly mistakes on offense. And so it was very, very sweet afternoon in the Luckett household.
Oh, man. And especially when they were showing old Fulmer clips where he's got those big, dumb hats. Say Tennessee. And they had the orange britches on, which, they all get hot and bothered when they wear the orange britches. And it's like, well, that's – at least you can pee down your leg and still not see it when you're wearing those orange britches that don't show. That's probably why they wore them, because Kentucky just whooped them up and down the field all day long. And I know there were certainly some moments as a Kentucky fan where you were kind of just like waiting for things to go wrong, especially when Keaton Upshaw dropped that touchdown pass. But
yeah,
I mean, aside from that, Kentucky played a really clean game. The only holding call was the Drake Jackson slam the guy to the ground holding call, which
which was bad call. Yeah,
like, come on, that happens all the time. Like, what are we doing here? So for the most part, Kentucky played a really good, sound football game. And once the offense completed a few passes, they really did whatever they wanted to. And I kind of wish Stoops would have ran up the score. I kind of do.
For me, it's 14-0. You get that Tyrell Asian pick. And I thought if Kentucky scores a touchdown there, the game's over. Because it was going to take 12 quarters for Darren Carantano to score 21 points, essentially. The way that game started, you throw two interceptions. The third, you're going to have to put Carantano. He's a mental mess over there.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way. So it's 17-0. And then you're like, okay, I'm like, you left some points on the field there. That was the first moment. And then Tennessee goes down and drives. But I really thought a key in the game was those next two possessions. They got stops. mm-hmm. where Kentucky was really in a bad situation. It could have been 14-17 nothing in the middle eight, where it could have turned a blowout into a close game again. They get two key stops because Garantano had to throw it, and he was, you know, scatterbrained all over the place. And then you come down, you score that first possession out of half, 11 plays, 76 yards. The game was over then. There was no way. Once you got to 20, there was no way they were going to have, one, the possessions, two, Kentucky doesn't give up big plays. So there was no way. So I knew, like, right then. I know a lot of people had back and forth. But what's getting lost in the sauce there a little bit is just that there was just no way Garantano was going to score.
Well, something I didn't notice until I did my second watch back, and I should have been more aware of it at the time, but, like, you know, you just had those bad Tennessee memories. I mean, hell, two years ago, it was just last year, Kentucky went up 13-0 and then gave up 17 unanswered and lost the game. So, like, those memories are still fresh. Those wounds are still there. But when Kubelik buzzes into the sideline, and, you know, like, this is one of those things that they pre-produce while doing commercial break, where Kubelik, I mean, Tom Hart kind of introduces it when they come back from commercial break, and he's like, you know, you can tell a lot by where the team feels about their quarterback, by how they respond to the interception. Oh, yeah. Cole, what did you see on the sideline? Well, it was a long 8 minutes for Jared Garantano. He was just kind of standing there by himself while the fans
for 7:56 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, uh-huh. my God. Like, and you know what? First off, I'm just happy that he finally played like normal Jared Garantano against Kentucky. He'd been Johnny freaking football, Joe Namath, Johnny Unitas. He'd been all of the above against Kentucky the previous three times. It's about damn time he's got back to normal against Kentucky. But secondly, I almost feel bad for him now because that team's just not like there's deep-rooted problems within that program. But, like, he just takes all of it because of the pick sixes, where you've got Johnny Redneck and their Hunter's Finest just throwing beer bottles through windows and screaming at me. They have lost their minds. Where even their TV reporters
it gets back to the point, though, Nick. I think how they've been just kind of raised in their fanhood, it's always been you beat Kentucky no matter what. We lose to Vanderbilt every once in a while. We can't beat Florida. The Bama series has been up and down, but the one constant is Tennessee always beats Kentucky in football. They own that even when they know subliminally that Kentucky has had the better program the last 4 years, but it hasn't mattered. Tennessee still beats Kentucky in football. And so when you go out there and you know, Kentucky really puts it to them and embarrasses them. Like, I think that's the root, I think, of all their fan base reaction this week, because that's not what they do. And that's why they're furious. I think that's the main reason Jeremy Pruitt felt he needed to fire somebody.
He just like, we're going to pick the new guy. Right. Get out of here.
You don't – at Tennessee, you do not lose to Kentucky. Like, you do not – like, that's a really big deal. And people, if you have friends in Nashville, if you have friends in Memphis – if you have friends in Knoxville, or if you have friends that are Tennessee fans here in the state of Kentucky, they're pissed this week. It's because you do not lose to Kentucky if you're Tennessee. That's why it's so sweet. And so rub it in their face. Rub it in their face, because you have to hear – you hear it all the time, and they're an abrasive fan base. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, they're horrible online. The worst. And you know what? They've at least stayed out of my mentions, which is a shock. Like, mm-hmm. when you get SEC Mike on here, just to like, come on, I want to drink some tears, Walls. Mm-hmm. Throw them my way.
And even nationally, the reaction has just been more of Tennessee, kind of like, I don't know, like a hangover got to them kind of thing. But when I was looking at the rosters, there wasn't much difference in there. All Tennessee star power on that roster was on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm. And
so they got some younger guys that aren't really up there yet that Pruitt's recruited. But Kentucky, and then you look at it, Kentucky matched the offensive line per se. And like I said 2 weeks ago, I think Kentucky has a better offensive line. And that showed out on Saturday.
The thing that surprised me was that Ridley, the only way that they had any success against Kentucky's defense running the football was tempo. By using tempo. And tempo is typically what you have to go to when you don't have the guys And Tennessee should have the guys on that offensive line to open up holes. And Kentucky just like, nope, not happening. Which I think tempo is something that is going to – like that. That's really going to be the weakness of this Kentucky
defense. Yeah, you're going to see some on Saturday for sure too.
So, I mean, how do we make it not our weakness, Luckett? I mean, because I feel like really when teams go tempo – it's because they're kind of out of their they don't know how else to beat a strong front seven, so they're resorting to that, and I don't know what you do other than stuff them on first down and don't let the drives really get going, and then get just it. Create some kind of havoc play or something, like
because beat tempo by getting tackles for loss and incompletions. That's how you beat tempo. If you just let them fall forward and keep going, you can get in a rut.
Right.
But that's how you beat tempo. You get tackles for loss. You get an incompletion.
Well, they need to do that because I ain't going to stand for Connor Bazelak and that drink with.
Yeah, it's just dork. Something that, like, you're right, they're going to have to work on. But that's something I think all defenses deal with. Tempo is tough and to deal with on a, you know, every day down.
Especially basis. When you lose Quentin Bohanna in that series as well.
Right.
Just kind of adjusting on the fly.
Yeah, I know that was a big thing, but I didn't think, like, live, it seemed like a thing, but going back and watching it, I didn't think it was too big a deal. Kentucky wasn't, they weren't putting numbers in the box. They were keeping it light because they were not going to let Tennessee throw the deep ball. And then basically what it got down to is, like, Eric Gray had a really good game. You know, you look at the stat line, 24 carries, 128 yards. Like, that's a workmanlike effort. But then when you dig a little deeper, he only had one, his longest run was 13 yards. I believe he had two runs that were over 10 yards. So, like, he wasn't getting, you know, anything big. It was what it creates is a lot of, you know, kind of third and fours and whatnot. But Kentucky was able to get off the field in key situations, which is important.
We need to know how Kentucky performed with runners in scoring position. That's going to be something I'm going to ask every week now. I just hope you're ready because that's that and loom large. And I feel like the same thing happened again, just not in as obvious of a manner this time around.
Offensively, Kentucky scored every time they had an opportunity outside of that last possession when the clock ran out.
Which, I mean, come on, Stoops. Just let Joey Gatewood run it in.
So you had four possessions pretty much, and you got 20 points. So 5 points per possession. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, two field goals and then the two touchdowns. So you got points on each opportunity, which is solid. On the other side, now this was against a Tennessee offense. Remember, that was like tops in the country in this metric. They were scoring every time they got a chance, pretty much going into that Georgia game. Kentucky shut them down, which let's see here. I got it written down.
I appreciate that Luckett has everything written down. Like,
okay,
everything's gone virtual, but not Adam Luckett.
Tennessee had five of these possessions. So they both teams have five of these possessions.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee only scored one time. Scored 7 points.
One of them was a Jamin Davis return.
Two turnover on downs. Yeah. One was a punt. The first possession, the Boogie Watson sack, knocking out field goal range.
And I'm glad you included that in the three plays Saturday.
Yeah, that was a big play.
Yeah, and it's
easy to get lost in a shuffle.
Especially when you've got a bunch of pick sixes. But to knock a team out of field goal range, especially who they've got a good kicker, which he's been uncharacteristically bad this year for some reason.
Surprisingly.
Still, to do that and to make them scoreless at the beginning of the game, huge situational football, which, like, look, damn it, this – the thing about this Kentucky football team through four games, I remember two games ago I was like, I don't know who – like, or it might have been last week. When I came in here and you finally got my head out of the gutter trying to figure out this team, situational football has been the theme through four games. In the first 2 weeks, it just wasn't there. And the last 2 weeks, it has been. And
well, that's what happens, though, Nick, if you don't give up big plays, which is what Kentucky does on defense, and then offensively, if you kind of labor to create explosives, specifically in the passing game, which Kentucky does. So it comes down to these situational – plays. So when you get like chances to score, those are really important in games Kentucky plays. Kentucky makes you play in the mud, and they play their best when they can get you in the mud. They don't want to track meet. They want to get you down the muck. And Coach Kubelik on the SEC Network after the game, I'm not sure how many people saw it, He had a line that was like, you know, if you take you go to a track meet or have like a combine or something like that, these Kentucky guys probably, you know, they're probably middle of the lower pack in the conference. But if you go out in the alley and wanted to have a street fight, like, I'm taking them over anybody else in this conference, because they're gonna scratch, they're gonna claw, they're gonna fight, they're gonna play a little dirty, and they're gonna find a way to beat you.
It's freaking Youngstown, man. Yeah, it's just like their head coach, and I love it. And you know what? It's in a weird year, at least Kentucky has their identity. And when you look at them from 10,000 feet and you get out of the how we kind of live and die with every single play, the national folks, they know that what Kentucky's going to do. Like, Kentucky's going to get out there and they're going to fight you, and they're going to play good defense. They're going to stop the run, limit explosive plays, and they're going to run the damn football. If they get it, if they can pass it at all, watch out.
If they get a lead, you're like, if this Kentucky team gets a lead on teams, a 2-score lead, most teams are toast.
The second half time of possession was like 21 minutes to 5. Tennessee had 4 possessions in that second half.
Yeah, all of them ended with a chance to score, all of Kentucky's drives in the second half.
Oh, man, that was beautiful. It really was. Pure, utter, is it utter domination? Utter domination sounds like something you do to a cow. So I don't think, but we'll go with it.
Anyway. And Kentucky, I think it was a good thing in that second half because the offense was in a rut.
Yes.
Where you look at the last 6 quarters, like that second half, I think was big to get rolling and get some confidence.
And as Eddie Grant said, I was like, just how much easier is it to run the football when you complete some passes? And it was like, yeah, you can only grind so much. And they did it in ways that weren't, mm-hmm. we're just going to throw screen. We're going to throw some slants, you know, like it was Kentucky fans weren't just like, oh, here we go again. It was a little bit different. And they were picking on the middle of the field where Tennessee was trying to blitz at them.
It's like one of the original RPOs. It's reading that the backside linebacker, if he bites on the run, you throw it. If he floats, you run it. And Tennessee's guys, mainly their nickel, their weak side nickel, and their two inside linebackers were just sprinting to the football. Mm-hmm. And they were looking, obviously, to stop the running game, but to blow up any design QB runs. Like, they wanted to attack the mesh. They wanted to blow all that stuff up. So it left the middle, that little void, wide open. And Terry hit a pop pass to Upshaw. Mm-hmm. He hit a couple slants off that RPO action. And as soon as he did that in the second half, it was a game changer. Then that's when Kentucky's run game really got going. And I hate to bash on A.J. Rose, but he had 10 runs, if you judge the success rate. So if you get 50% on first down, 70% on second down, 100% on third and fourth down, that's what the deems a successful play. A.J. Rose had 1 successful run on 10 rushes.
So wait, so say that again. Success is if you get – is it how many yards per down?
Yeah. So if it's first and 10, you get at least 5 yards on first down. So you want to gain at least 50% of the yards to gain on first down.
Okay.
On second down, you want to gain at least 70% of the yards to gain.
On the third and fourth,
obviously, you want to gain 100% because you want to move the chains. So AJ had that 10-yard run after the Asian interception,
mm-hmm.
which was a tough physical run. But other than that, it was a lot of 1 to 2 yard gain, a couple of negative plays.
And that first play of the game, too. Right. I mean, like, it was so much green grass, mm-hmm. and he just had one hand.
That was a big one. That and the Ali one were two plays that really stuck out. Of like, man,
like, what the hell was Josh Ali looking at? I
don't know.
I really have no idea. I don't know if there was a safety off screen. I don't think there was a safety off screen.
That's what I figured. There was just a guy there that I just didn't see on the.
Because it made no sense why he was cutting back into the defender instead of just running up the middle of the field. So, I don't understand. We don't have the wide camera angle. But to the AJ Rose, to make matters worse, is that like Rodriguez got rolling, and that dude.
Well, it was all the backs though.
Yeah.
Terry had a good day on his design runs, which Terry, I think Eddie Green used him how I think you have to use him. They didn't try to make him be a playmaker. He just managed the game and took advantage of in key scenarios to make key plays. But it wasn't like a thing where they're force feeding him. Mm-hmm. Against Ole Miss, Auburn, Mississippi State, they tried to shove him down the defense's neck. Where against in Tennessee, they just let the game come to him more. and just let him be a quarterback, make plays. I think that's the game plan. And then McClain was good when he was in there, and even Tisdale at the end.
Yeah, it was a hard fought run.
Look good.
Now, I think at that point, Tennessee had their kind of hearts ripped out of them, but still.
Yeah, but he made run and showed patience that we just don't see, I don't think, from Rose. A lot of it's because he runs so high, and he's a one cut. You know, you want to get him in there one cut and then maybe try to explode through a crease.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it just – there's been two situations the last two games where I think it would be obvious Chris Rodriguez situations. You get the turnover coming out of half, turnover on or whatever it was, where you get the ball at the Mississippi State 25.
Yeah, and he fumbles
it. Bring Rose out, and then you get it after the agent interception, and you let Rose through that drive. Like, those just feel like situations where it should be your hammer in there.
The good news is, though, is there was two things that we were asking about Kentucky's offense going into this week that I think the light bulb went off in Eddie Grant's head in that halftime locker room. And maybe not even so at halftime. Nevertheless, it was – you needed somebody besides Josh Elliott to catch a pass. And it makes your quarterback look exponentially better if just when he hits guys in the hands, they catch the ball. And then you needed to get to your you needed to find your running back. And it was nut cutting time for the receivers if they were going to drop passes, and for the running backs if they – and I think he found Rodriguez, and he found that, hey, if we get Allen – when Allen Daly can be that guy. Our tight ends aren't that bad, even though Upshaw had a bad drop. So it felt like they got their personnel right. They fed Rodriguez on that important drive coming out of the halftime locker room. I think he had six touches for 42 yards and really got the offense moving, got them rolling. So I
thought the red zone play calling just in general was really good.
I still am a bigger fan of throwing it on second and short than waiting until third and short. But that's just, you know, it worked out on that third down fade. And it worked out the week before, I think, on a third down pass as well on third and short. So, but nevertheless, they ended in touchdowns more times than not.
It's just a slow start. Like, you need to avoid that. And I think going into this game coming up, they're facing a defense they should be able to move the football on. So it's kind of – I think it's kind of a get-right game for this offense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it can be underestimated just how big – I think that second half was huge for that team offensively. Because if you come out and you labor then, I mean, you win the game, everybody's excited, but that offense is getting a little side eye all week.
Right. You're not getting that. And now – and it's also the – just looking at the Terry Wilson stat line, you know, you might want some more yards, but that kind of efficiency where you're just not throwing a lot of incomplete passes and you're moving the ball forward. Yeah. That's what's most important.
Right. 15 attempts, you know, about five or six rushes. Like, I think that's Terry. I think that's his sweet spot right there. If you can win games like that, obviously you have to run it a bunch to do that and get leads. But I think that's when the team is at its best, when he's just, you know, I don't say game manager in a bad way. It's just when he's able to manage the game, I think that's when he's most effective, because that's when you can sneak him out on some zone reads. Those runs become more effective. And then in the passing game, you're just not asking him to do too much. You're keeping everything very easy and simple for him, and he can deliver. And you saw he delivered in key situations. You look at the third down throws he made. You look at all the two Upshaw ones and then the Allen Daly one in the red zone. All of those were throws on the money.
No, they were. And even the check down to Ali that it got overturned, like, that one was on the money. Mm-hmm. And Stoops even said, he's like, we wanted to take an even bigger shot. But he read through his progressions. And, I mean, I think if Ali catches it cleanly, I don't think that the video had enough to overturn it with his foot down or not. That was just the excuse they were looking for. But nevertheless, Terry's got some swagger about him. He's got his swagger back. He's kind of just, like you said, football is a game of momentum. They're feeling good about themselves. And this is a week where you've seen Kentucky do this in the past, but Missouri's been a get-right game before. And
I think the scheduling did Kentucky a favor this week.
Oh, so you're the one person who isn't just like, oh, they're hosing us again. That SEC, they're out to get us.
10 times out of 10, I would rather play Missouri before Georgia.
That's what I was thinking too. Now there is a part of me that's
you can go in the Georgia game. It's you now. Georgia's the bye, and then it's Vandy after that. So this the Georgia game is just it's a kitchen sink game. You know, if you can, you know, you want to win Saturday, so you're all focused on Saturday. But let's say you win Saturday, and then you know, just throw it all at them, and then don't worry about empty the clip. Everything you got, just unleash it, and then you know you got a bye week and Vandy to figure stuff out before you head to that big road trip to Bama, Florida, back to back. I think it's a good spot for Kentucky. Obviously, Georgia comes off a bye. Mm-hmm. But, you know, coming off a bye can be weird sometimes, especially going on the road for a noon kick.
A bad game, too, where your quarterback threw a bunch of turnovers. When that was, right. I mean, that's what Bennett was he's a game manager, and he didn't manage the game at all.
We're probably two bad series away in Lexington from seeing JT Daniels back in there or DeJuan Mathis. So, you know, who knows? But, like, I think this week's important, but I think it comes at a good week, and I don't know. It just doesn't scream hangover spot to me for Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because of that 2-2 or the 0-2 start.
So that's my question for you, Luckett, because I know that in the preseason you picked the Missouri game a loss. Was it just because of the hangover potential spot?
I thought back to back Tennessee, Georgia, and then having to play at Missouri, I thought that was tough. Like you're talking about getting up for two big division games. Tennessee, obvious reasons, you know, you want to beat them border war, but even the coaching staff has talked publicly about how they need to beat Georgia. Like that's their next goal. Mm-hmm. So you get two monster games like that back to back, and then Missouri just sneaks up on you on the road. It was going to be a noon kick, 11-8. I mean, it just, that game scared me. That's why I picked a loss. But I think the 0-2 start and the shuffling of the schedule, I think this game lands in a good spot. For Kentucky. And I think they match up well when kind of doing a deeper dive on Drinkwitz's team.
Now, here's my question for you, because we talked about Kentucky's second half efficiency against the Tennessee defense. How can Kentucky, is this a matchup where you can just easily carry that momentum into Missouri and build off of that and really – Let your offense kind of spread its wings a little bit to where they're humming by the time Georgia comes to town.
I think so. I mean, Missouri ranks 10th in the SEC in yards per play allowed. You look at the whole season, this is probably going to be the third worst defense they'll face all year.
That's good.
When you look at Ole Miss, Vandy, and then Missouri, from what I've seen so far, this was a defensive front Kentucky pushed around last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the same type of front. They play, you know, they play a kind of a modern, like, five defensive back defense. So they'll be pretty much nickel the entire game. I think it's someone they matched up with well. And this was a group, remember, Nick, last year in the Missouri podcast, I came on and said they do not defend the QB run. Like, struggle at that. They haven't seen it yet this year. So we haven't seen if they get any adjustments, but they got the same D coordinator. So I would assume it's going to be kind of the same issues. Yeah. So I think Terry could have a big day on the ground. I think Kentucky should be able to – they should be able to impose their will on offense. And I think it's a good bounce game for the offense. I think the offense could have a day.
Yeah, Eddie said they do some different things, even though they kept the defensive coordinator. But, like, this defense gave up 35 points to Tennessee, which, like, I don't – how? I know
– their points per scoring opportunity defense – is not good.
They also are pretty horrific.
They're last in the SEC in red zone touchdown rate allowed.
Yeah, 12 touchdowns for 15 red zone trips. Not good. Not good at all. And I also, what was the other stat I had pulled up? They aren't like a havoc defense either. They haven't created a lot of tackles for a loss, a lot of sacks. -5 in the turnover margin. And Coach Dorkowitz, that was his big emphasis during the bye week, the ball is life, I don't know, something like that. We got to take care of the ball. That's the second to worst turnover margin in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, they had really Kobe Whiteside was supposed to be a guy that was potential all-SEC guy at D-tackle, and he hasn't played well to start the season. And then when you look at their defense, and really this is kind of the roster overall, like just recruiting rankings, they don't have like any blue chip or four star guys. Like Bazelak is the only four star starting on offense or playing major snaps on offense. And then defensively, they got a reserve defensive lineman that was a four star like junior college recruit. But like, I think Kentucky has better talent than them, and I think they match up well. This pass their pass defense has been really bad.
300 yards a game.
So hopefully Terry can have a good, get some stuff going through the air, and then if Kentucky's able to pass it, then it's going to make the run attack even more successful, I think.
They do have Nick Bolton, and it kind of reminds me of the
He's good.
Yeah, he's really good, but it kind of reminds me of like when Avery Williamson was getting a bunch of tackles for Kentucky. Is it's like, well,
yeah.
Somebody's got to get him, you know.
Well, you look at their defense, and I like their secondary. They've got a lot of experience back there. It's guys that have been starting for a while.
Is that one kid still there, AC?
No, he graduated last year.
Oh, man. That would have been great just to hear them all whining about the Ahmad Wagner flag still. Because, yeah. they've been whining about that for a long time.
Do you remember back on signing day when Drinkwitz got that commit from that corner?
And he just lost his mind. Oh, my God. It was like he
starts for them as a true freshman.
Oh, well, let's pick on him, shall we?
And so, but their safeties are really good. And they use them a lot of different ways. And Bolton's awesome, but up front, Kentucky should have their way with this group. I would think. But really, the matchup to me is the other side. Like that's the matchup because Bazelak has been good since he's gotten in there, and they're getting a ton of big plays.
The completion percentage for him, it's 71%.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that's not, you don't see that with true freshmen who are coming in off the bench. Or he's a redshirt freshman. So
right.
He's been there 2 years. But still, just putting it on him. He's averaging 10 yards an
attempt.
Yeah.
He's third in the SEC behind Corral and Mac Jones.
I don't see like a ton of weapons out there like that. I'm like, oh my gosh. So like that's even more impressive. Bazelak's been good, man.
I'm glad you brought that up because you look at their offense. It's again, they have a talent issue. I think they got a JUCO starting at left tackle, first year junior college player. They got a Rutgers grad transfer starting at center. They've got a Virginia Tech grad transfer starting at receiver, and they got it. D2 Angelo State transfer starting at receiver.
Damon Hazleton is that receiver that
right, and he actually hadn't done much this year.
He played well against Echols last year, though.
Yeah, he did.
A touchdown in the end zone.
It was a competitive catch he got over Echols,
which I'm sure that he'll be reminded of that. Yeah, right. Going into the game, but I really appreciated. It felt like deja vu all over again when you said that an App State coach has an offense that's really just all predicated off of big plays.
Big plays.
Where have we heard that before?
I wonder. He's got some similarities to Satterfield, but they're a lot different too.
They also are kind of all shucksy.
Yeah.
They just try to put on that Appalachian charm, you know. And that was more Savannah. I watched that episode. Oh, Savannah, it rolls off your tongue like molasses. But they got some all shucks to them. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Like
the Carolina twang's a weird twang.
It is. It's different.
Like the country Carolina twang.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because it just varies because you've got mountains.
It's fast, but it's slow.
Right. Right. And it's not quite East Tennessee. Like,
yeah, it's not the drawl.
Or that, like, what's the kind of like squealiness to it that you get from East Tennessee? So it's a little bit tougher to nail down, but I think I finally nailed down why I hate Eli Drinkwitz so much. And it's not just because he's a nerd. It's because when Missouri came to the SEC, of all the things, like at least Texas A&M, they're like, okay, the SEC's in Texas now. And they've got all their traditions. They're weird, but like it at least makes sense from a cultural standpoint. Missouri didn't quite have that. But you know what? They were pretty good at basketball at the time. I forget who was their coach then. It might have been Quinn Snyder.
They had Mike Anderson, and then he left and Frank Haith came.
With his stupid big orthopedic looking shoes. Those white sneakers that he wears with his suits. It was just a horrible.
Well, I think that was the main selling point for Missouri was that they could bring something in basketball.
Right. I mean, the rivalry of Kansas.
They're respectable in football. Game.
Yeah. And Gary Pinkle, you know what? He had a hard-nosed mentality about him. They always had really good defensive line. I mean, that was Missouri football. Good in the trenches. And with Barry Odom, he kind of lost it in recruiting, but at least he had that mentality. You know, he was a Pinkle guy as well. And when they got rid of Barry Odom to replace him for Drinkwitz, it really just reflects the culture that Missouri has. They're a bunch of J-school dorks who think they're better than everybody. We're not. They're not at all. And to see them bragging about Pat Forty as an alumnus, we have the best journalism school in the country. First and foremost, no, you don't. Secondly, you're bragging about Pat Forty as your esteemed alumnus? Like, get the hell out of here with that nonsense. And Drinkwitz just embodies that nerddom that just drives me nuts. And the fact that they're going away from a guy like Barry Odom, who's this kind of hard ass who prides himself on good defense. I mean, for Christ's sakes, he's the only guy that's been able to really slow down Ole Miss all year. Up until this point, Kentucky holding them to 35 in regulation was the gold standard.
Yeah.
He was able to do that last week because he knows defensive football. And once he got rid of, believe it or not, hiring Derek Dooley was a bad idea. That kind of screwed him over. They didn't let him throw a mulligan. Instead, they get Drinkwitz, who, I mean, he's fake football guy tough. Like, we're having a toughness Tuesday day today. And it's like, dude, that is such a how do you do, fellow kids kind of try hard move. Like, you're not a tough guy, okay? You're really putting on this front. And it drives me crazy because Drinkwitz perfectly embodies what I hate about Missouri being in the SEC. And what I'm going to hate about it, and I hope that Mark Stoops does his guy, Barry Odom, a favor and shoves him into a locker. Because Odom, for a while, was kind of like John Calipari's Mark Fox, where Stoops would just really talk him up because he was a defensive guy who kind of struggled to find his right coordinator on offense. And he had that going for a little while. And that they pulled the trigger too soon. And now we're stuck with this dork who just wants to get some big plays. And you know what? If I know Mark Stoops, he's going to just shove it right down their throats.
I did a little bit of a deep dive when I was writing the scouting report this week. And if you go back and remember that search, like their AD came up with a list of four candidates after they fired Odom.
And they said,
and it's not called Board of Trustees. It's like their regents or something.
Board of Regents, I think, or something like that.
And they pretty much showed him to go wipe his ass with that list.
Go get a new list.
Yeah. And so he lands on, it came down to like Drinkwitz and someone else. I can't remember who was the other one, but Drinkwitz, 1 year as a head coach, he was making like $500,000 as NC State's offensive coordinator. He goes makes like $700K. And then they hire him and they're paying him $4 million a year. Like, he got like the biggest pay raise anybody could ever dream of having. And so, you know, he starts off, they were down 35-3 at Alabama. They throw some fight in the fourth quarter. They go to Tennessee. Game was really never close. They were down 28-6 late in the third quarter. They put Bazelak in there, gave him some signs of life.
That quarterback that he started to beginning of
year, Tom Robinson,
sucked. He was so bad. He was worse than Western Kentucky's quarterback, who just was like, well, he's an athlete, but he can't throw it. I mean, he's just bouncing balls off the turf. He was terrible.
And then they play Bo Pelini. And man, like, if you like defensive football, do not put on that tape to watch LSU. Like, there's some things, like, it's disgusting watching it. Like, going back and seeing how Missouri scored with some of those busts. Like, there's first possession, they run a flea flicker. LSU's really not surprised. They get a pressure on Bazelak. He throws it up. It just goes up for grabs. And, like, the corner of safety just mistimes the jump.
It was Missouri bad, scores. Too. It was like when you are playing NCAA or Madden and
right.
You switch players and you switch too soon and he just mistimes the jump. That was what it was like. It was like somebody messed up on the controller.
Yeah, that's what it looked
like. A second too early.
There was another one later in that, I think that same quarter, first quarter. They run a little angle route with their running back, and like no one comes with it. No one is there when he catches it, and he just runs in the end zone. No one puts a finger on him. So it's just like, well, what the hell were they in there? And then they run a deep post later in the game, and there is nobody on the screen.
Kind of like the Louisville Miami game.
Yeah, yeah. And then they run a deep cross later in the game, and LSU misses like 10, 12 tackles, and it ends up being like an 80-yard gain. So it's just, watching that game, I was like, well, they got a lot of that from big plays, and Kentucky doesn't really give up big plays. I don't think that's going to be something they're going to get up.
I know. And you know what I'm hyped about, too. Like, it is Missouri, only Florida and A&M have allowed fewer sacks. Now, you know, obviously Florida.
It's been better with Bazelak in there. But with Robinson, he was bad. He was taking a lot of sacks.
Yeah, and I think the even though Kentucky's not going to apply a lot of pressure, they can get a lot of natural pressure with Boogie, Jordan Wright, J.J. Weaver. I mean, those guys on the edge,
they look It all comes down to stopping the run. Larry Roundtree is a good back. He's been there for 4 years. He's going to end up being Mizzou's second all-time leading rusher in program history.
It's pretty good.
He's, you know, he's just solid. He's been solid all 4 years. And so they're going to run that outside zone like you see from the 49ers, like we saw from Louisville last year. And really try to get you east-west, going east-west, stretch you out so they can attack you north-south, attack you vertically. Stopping him, I think, is really the key. And then their backup running back is probably the most dangerous player on the team. Like, he's really explosive. He's gotten, like, I believe he has 21 touches this season, and four have gone for 20-plus yards. Both as a runner and a catcher, I think he's dangerous. Tyler Beatty, and he was the guy who scored the touchdown on Kentucky last year. Oh. Where they threw that little swing to him out of the backfield, and he just went.
I remember him.
He's Tyler Beatty. He can fly.
Yeah, I always pronounce it Batty, but Batty is what you use that for different. Like, it's like a she a Batty. And here's me doing that.
Do you remember
fellow kids?
When they had Michael Porter Jr. and they played at Kentucky, and they caught him at Rupp Arena.
Is she a baddie?
Yeah.
I also remember when Michael Porter Jr. finally got in that SEC tournament, and it was in St. Louis, and it was like, oh, here we go. And he has the chance to hit the game-winning three, and he pulls, and it was just not even close from the top of the key. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was great. That was great.
Good times in that St. Louis SEC tournament.
Man, this is one I do not regret not going to.
Yeah, I don't think they'll ever go back there. That must have just been in the contract or something.
Oh, well, there's the one bone we're going to throw to you, Missouri.
The one hope was like, all right, maybe Missouri will be good this year. And we can get like a Kentucky, Missouri.
They actually had a chance for it too. But man, you want to talk about scorn fans. They get the Porter family. Like, they hire the dad, get Michael Porter Jr. And then his brother, who I never thought he was that good because he was kind of clumsy. He actually got he got really good going into his sophomore season. And then he's out for the year. It's just fragile. Maybe they need to get off that vegan diet. I hope those were the takes that were falling, was that the vegan diet was causing them to be injury prone. That's the kind of take I need in my life from you would have it in St. Louis, but do people in St. Louis or Kansas City, do they even care about Missouri football or Missouri athletics in general?
You know, that's a good question. I don't really know what their type of dynamics are.
Because
Columbia's halfway. I think it's in the middle. Louis, Columbia, and then Kansas City. And I think, you know, whatever interstate that is, that's how you come to get to.
One of my friends, he went to UK when journalism school, man. We did radio stuff together. And he does radio for the ESPN station in Kansas City now. It might be the other one. It's 810, whatever that channel is. But it's like almost all Chiefs and Royals. And then Missouri gets Friday, Monday treatment because games are happening, but it's not top of the shelf in Kansas City. I wonder if it's any different in St. Louis when baseball and hockey's not happening. Cause right now it's kind of a dead time for them.
Yeah. Well,
so they
don't
more
have
attention.
The Rams too, for sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. Either way, it's just like Missouri, just go eat it. And here's the thing that I worry about. I love the 5-game winning streak over them so much. And I just want to keep rubbing it in their faces. I know Mark Stoops doesn't want to hear about it. I know Drinkwitz said he's going to be telling. He's like, it's not going to matter on Saturday, but I'm not going to ignore it. He's like, I inherited the history, good and bad. So he's at least going to try to motivate his guys with it. And I don't want to lose that in this scenario, because I mean, we're not talking must win or anything like that. You built up a lot of goodwill here, but let's keep this train rolling. Let's keep this train chugging along, Kate.
And what is a game day atmosphere like there?
It's the worst. I mean, at least
it worse than Vandy?
Yeah, it is, because at Vandy, you at least got a bunch of Kentucky fans showing up. But like nobody wants to go to Ferret Field or whatever. So at least this time, the atmosphere, even with the limited COVID restrictions, it'll be similar to what it normally is there. So at least we got that. Missouri, gosh.
The thing I hope for your sake they handle Mr. Drinkwitz.
I know. Well, and like I actually enjoy, like I think it is a really pretty college town, and like I enjoy the there's this little burger joint that I went to, and like, you know, it's one of those that's like dimly lit, and you can see the grease sitting over there. Like, they got some good spots down there, good pizza places. People are nice, and they even had this place that it was a video game slushy bar, where, you know, they got like classic video games, and you just go get your margaritas or whatever the hell you want. Like, they got some. I enjoy going there from a. It's the Friday night before a game. I'm gonna go eat some good food and enjoy some cocktails. Stay at the Drury Inn. They got a lot of Drury Inns in that part of in that neck of the woods, but. I enjoy my trips there, and I especially enjoy them because Kentucky kicks their ass. And I want this trend to continue, because I think part of the reason why, like another reason why I'm triggered by them, is it's a little Scott Satterfield, you know? And I just want to bury him. Just want to bury him, rub their noses in it. Because this is a game where you should be able to muck it up and just physically out-muscle them.
The thing about this game is, Satterfield. Now you got me mixing them up. Drinkwitz, he does, like, he uses a lot of motions. You're going to see, like, those orbit motions where you make that big circle. Mm-hmm. You're going to see a motion on nearly every play. And then you're going to see a lot of different formations that you're going to have to be ready for. He's going to mix in some tempo. So you have to be ready to, you know, your pre-snap reads and stuff. You got to be on your P's and Q's, and he's going to try to tempo Kentucky into some miscommunication. And that's where you get scared, because that's where the big play can come from. But if Kentucky can get lined up, I think they're going to be fine. They should be able to eliminate the big play. If they can't hit the big play, I think it's going to be hard for them to move the football. Well,
and when Kentucky got gashed on tempo against Tennessee, it was in the run game, and they were getting like 5 yards, you know,
I think you're fine with, though, if that's what they want to do.
Exactly. And that against Ole Miss, it was guys not getting lined up, and I at least believe that those guys have the
experience. Ole Miss is a different animal too, because they're going a million miles an hour. Like, they practice that every day. To be that fast and be that good at it, you got to do it all the time.
Like, and in I the just second don't know game if they're of gonna the see season, that from anybody else. Like,
right, and not much tape on like what Lang was going to do there either.
Right, exactly. So the only thing that worries me, look at, is how little I'm worried right now.
Obviously, it's, you know, you're going on the road. So anytime you go on the road, and then it's, you know, obviously it's a weird spot. Like, Kentucky's being hyped up. Stoops went on Feinbaum this week.
Oh, I didn't see.
He went on yesterday, first hour.
I wonder if he gave a little shots at Paul, because that was, what, a couple weeks back. He's like, well, they'll be saying that now and then calling me back here in a few weeks.
I was listening to it while I worked. I wouldn't listen too closely, but it didn't sound like he did.
It was probably typical Stoops, too. When they call him on a Monday, like, what's he going to say that he hasn't said 17 times that day?
Yeah.
It's the worst time to catch Stoops is on a – well, not the worst, but – Did you hear Stoops' press conference? I wanted to get your thoughts
on the Monday one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is he taking shots at?
That's what I wanted to ask you. I have a note here to ask you that.
Because, like, I know that most of y'all probably aren't listening to his 30-minute conversations, but he went on and on about guys needing to take it serious. And I know guys want to get theirs, but we've got to be unselfish. And he's pointing to, like, Jamin Davis as, like, here's a guy.
I thought about J.J. Weaver last year, because there was that scuttlebutt that came out about this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's playing this year, so it's obviously – I don't think it would be him.
Well, and I think you get a little bit of Bully McCall, because Bully's not – you know, he doesn't strike me as the most mature kind of guy, and he got suspended a week or two ago.
He's got a chance this week, though.
So maybe some of it was like, and he even when asked about Bully, he kind of was like, we need to put some pressure on him. So, but to summarize it succinctly, he essentially said, the young guys are talented. I love them, but they got to be more unselfish. And it makes me wonder if there was something there that was bothering him and he was just waiting until a good moment to really hammer him on it. Because I think his thing is like, I really like what our seniors are doing, but I got to make sure these young, talented guys have that same mentality whenever these seniors are gone.
I think he was talking about the true freshmen.
I think so. That's my best guess. Because nothing else really makes much sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I was trying to think that too. Like, who would he be talking about? Would you think like... Tay-Tay Croons popped in my head. Because we ain't heard a peep from that kid.
We haven't heard anything from Moses Douglas. You know, like, I don't know. But that's just us grasping at straws because...
I took the comment more to like, it was like an old, like somebody that's probably a redshirt freshman or redshirt sophomore.
That might be close. That had a one-sided conversation with. So,
or like KD McDaniel, maybe, because he's just kind of, I mean, he's close, but he's kind of buried behind a really good position.
And I think I'm more just like, I'm more hopeful that Stoops is saying, hey, something out there could fester, so I'm going to head it off at the pass. We're going to nip this problem in the bud. We're going to bring the team together, and we're going to try to get everybody on the same page mentality-wise, especially when you look at, like, the makeups of the classes where a lot of the successful guys, like Sands, like Pascal, or, well, hell, I guess Landon, they're more highly recruited. But you've got a lot of guys who have that hard nose, we're going to go to work kind of mentality. Some of these – there's a lot of trash talking. for these underclassmen. So maybe that's just him trying to get into their heads. Either way, the time to do that kind of sort of messaging is when you have a lot of good things to say about your win, not a whole lot of bad. So you just kind of generate something to keep people on their toes anyway. And maybe Stoops was doing that, or gamesmanship, stuff that he doesn't have the chance to do very often. So let's hope that that's what it was. And it was, in fact, no big deal. But it was kind of weird.
Very interesting timing. So obviously something's going on there that he's not all too happy with. But I think also the team, they're an older team. So I think he feels like he can do that, calling out in public, because I think the locker room's probably in pretty good.
They're keeping everything in line. Yeah.
Right.
Were you surprised that Alabama just absolutely stomped Georgia? I thought that was some easy money.
Yeah, what that game comes down to is just it's skill talent, and the mailman just wasn't beaten that Alabama team. Like it just comes like, not that Mac Jones has been good this year, but like it's Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith and Najee Harris. Like the skill talent in these big games is just the difference maker. That's why Alabama, I think they're going to win it all. And I know the defense isn't great, but we saw this with last year with LSU. It just doesn't matter if you're able to play in space and you got receivers that can just go up and get it. And you got a running back that's just going to run on everybody. It's tough because they're going to score 38 to 42 points on everybody they play. It's can you get to that number? Mm-hmm. And Georgia just didn't. Georgia hung there for a little bit, but they just didn't have the ammo. And that's what I thought all week. I just didn't know if they would have the ammo to do it, because like Georgia's got a great defense, but we're seeing all these great defenses just get sliced by these modern day offenses right now.
They really,
especially are. With this, like when you have this elite talent at receiver, I think that's the biggest thing LSU, I think, showed to everybody last year. Like Burrow was good, but it was also just the skill talent they had.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson, he's showing he's a freak right now.
Ja'Marr Chase is probably going to be the first receiver in this next draft. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, look what he did last night. Mm-hmm. They had an NFL tight end. Terrace Marshall, who was like the fourth receiver on that team, might end up like being one of the leaders in receiving in the SEC this year. Like he's having a monster year. LSU stinks, but he's having a monster year. Like they just had like an unbelievable amount of talent at the skill spots last year.
I'm also, of the things that happened on Saturday, one of the least surprising things was that North Carolina was overrated. Like, oh, looky here. They were ranked I couldn't even believe they were fifth in the country because they've been unimpressive the entire time going into that game. So good for Mike Norvell beating the overranked fifth-ranked North
Carolina. Big game coming up for Florida State and Louisville.
Yes, yes.
The Which monster I could, game for Louisville.
Of all of the things to have, that surprised me a lot was that, like, if there was going to be a score where it was a close game, 12-7, Louisville's defense doing anything.
That if you told me Louisville only scored 7 points at Notre Dame, that one got ugly. Which Notre Dame moved the ball. They just can't create explosive plays. So, like, they consistently move the ball. They just had some red zone blunders and let Louisville hang around.
It really is a Clemson, Alabama. I think Ohio State's going to be the other one. And then who's the fourth team that gets their ass kicked in the playoff?
But when I look at Clemson, like, they lost Justin Ross. Obviously, Etienne's a badass. But I just don't know if they have the receivers. Like, if you get in a shootout with Alabama, I know you got Trevor Lawrence, but Waddle's a walking video game. And Devontae Smith is just, he's open every time. Like, it don't matter who's covering him. And then Najee Harris is mini Derrick Henry.
They're good.
And then they got probably the best offensive line in college football. Like, the offense is just ridiculous.
Man, that's not going to be a fun game in Tuscaloosa.
No. Well, let's hope
you got nothing to lose. So
get, you know, the weather's turning, Nick Roush. The weather's going to turn. And so you get that wind picked up a little bit. You know, you get a couple turnovers.
Maybe Mac Jones gets in his head. You know, people are showing that picture of him in a construction hat outside of the craft center and he starts getting a little shaky.
You don't know.
Some turnovers. Which they've been a lot of fun, all the interceptions and fumbles. It's going to end up that well's going to drop eventually.
The good thing in that game, though, is like Kentucky should be able to run the ball a little bit on Alabama. So if they could just hit a couple explosive plays, you know, who knows? But yeah, it's tough. Jalen Waddle is just a freakazoid. Like, I cannot get over how good that kid is.
Yeah, I know you were foaming at the mouth thinking about the Bengals taking him.
Yeah, well, if he can't play left tackle, it's probably not going to happen.
This weekend, Big Ten football back.
But your cousin, man, I mean, knocked out for the first one.
I know. And bringing in the backup, Brian's going to be calling the shots on the sideline, which is just kind of weird. Like, I don't know. I forget that he's – not that I forget that he's been a coach there, but it just seems so much more recent because I remember when Jeff was coaching Brian. So, like,
yeah,
it's just going to be – it's going to be different. I'm hoping they can do something big against Iowa. Who knows if their quarterback's going to be worth a damn or not. But, hey, they got Wandale, so anything can happen. Or not Wandale, Rondale.
Dale's
mixed up.
There's a shot at snow for Michigan, Minnesota Saturday night. Like, it's on the forecast for Friday and Sunday, and it's supposed to be like 32 degrees at kickoff.
Like, that'd be great. Yeah. Big Ten kicking off the season in snow.
And also, Michigan State plays Rutgers. And just for the insanity of it, I'm playing the under just so I'm watching the game. So I can watch that garbage for 60 minutes. So
I'm going to have that on the screen. You actually want to put yourself through that. I want to watch Scott Frost just get his mouth just buried in the turf, just decimated by Ohio State.
Frost came out today. He has two starting quarterbacks.
Oh, of course he does. He's doing the Eli Drinkwitz thing. Well, they got to prepare for them all. It's like, it don't matter. Ohio State's going to kick your ass. Is Martinez still there?
Yeah. He's only a junior, senior.
That's hilarious.
I think he's the junior.
He's been there forever.
Yeah. He's on that Garantano plan. Martinez one time was committed to Tennessee.
Small.
And then they fired – when they fired Butch, that's when kind of they lost him in the shuffle.
Oh, man. Well, Nebraska's gain, am I right?
Yeah. Do we need to get back on Fate Syracuse, -45, Clemson? Favored by 45 points in a conference game.
Yeah. Did Clemson cover that spread in the first half against Georgia Tech? I think they had like,
I'm pretty sure.
True, it's a lot of points.
I didn't really watch any of that, I just kept looking at it, and it was just like, good points. Night.
Oh man, well, look, I think it's time for me to fly. My son's very not happy with me. I've been working a lot today instead of hanging out with him, he's pissed. So, quit talking football, Dad.
go do your dad things. Just tell your son, Duke. It's going to be a get-right game for Kentucky's offense.
Yes. And
as long as they keep the big play in check, they should be in really good shape.
Hey, that sounds good to me. Keep on those winning ways before we bring on Georgia. Enjoy the ball game this weekend, folks. And remember to always go Cats and go Kroger.